Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Peyton Davis's birthday. Kim Holmes joins me. Hey, wish Peyton Davis a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
She's singing this. Girl can sing.
You can hear the roar of a crowd at the touchdown all the way.
Now, you know, I was talking earlier about I got to talking about national anthems, right? And do you remember how I would play like local people singing the national anthem, and people would come to it live, and it was just it's a really cool part of living in small town America. But you and I both grew up in larger towns, and then you moved to small towns. But it is growing up where people know who you are, right? And you know the kids, kids in town and whatnot. I'm curious your thoughts, because you like me, it didn't grow up like that.
Well, I
or did you?
I think it's great living in a small town. I always lived in big places. Hamilton, Ohio, was about 30,000 people when I was growing up. So that's considered a small town now, but for me, you still knew everybody. What I liked about a small town like that was everybody knew you. The police knew you. The police knew your parents. And if you got in trouble, they'd bring you home and then turn you over to your father.
Yeah, no shit.
And face his wrath. But when I moved to Europe outside of Florence, Italy, which was 400,000 people back then, when I was in Switzerland, that was 2,600 people. And then when I moved back to the States, Port Townsend was 6,000 people. And I just got into that groove of a small town. And when I moved here, it was still considered a small town. I loved it. I mean, I like knowing everybody.
Yeah, well, you would. You're like, you're that kind of guy. You're a know everybody. No, but you know, I was talking earlier about, about getting a phone call after I got back from Iraq and I was, I'd been elected to the city council. And we'd had a blizzard, and then the city was opening back up, and a woman called and said, Matt, could you help me? I'm in your ward, and I live over by University Park, and my husband's got an appointment with a heart specialist today, and the hospital's open. And when I looked out, the snowplow had come, right? And Kim knows the story. And there's maybe 3 to 4 feet of ice and snow piled in front of the driveway in a wall, and I can't get out. And I don't know how I'm going to get in there. She said, could you help me? And I said, yeah, I can help you. And she said, well, is there somebody I can call? I said, no. I'll get my snow plow, and me and Patrick will be over in 5 minutes. And she said, oh, okay. And so So Patrick and I went over, and he and I kind of blasted through the first spot, which is the hardest thing to do. And then, And then Patrick got to work. Old P. Diddy got to work, and I shot the shit with the lady in her garage, or with her and her husband. And she, right, she was, I mean, they were just the nicest people. And
yeah.
And you had those kind of experiences. I remember going up to, when I first started, we had a bus called the Superliner, and it was nice. You could do the show from the bus. But we had, during the summer, we had a storm that flooded a town called Roseau, Minnesota. And the storm, if you can imagine this, the storm, Midwest summer storm, right, parks over Roseau and drops 18 inches of rain that night. And, you know, the rivers rise and they spill out of their banks. And, I mean, there's no time. And I took a bunch of high school kids up there. And because the city that I lived in the year before I moved there, it was flooded. I always joke that my family, we were the only five people that moved to that city in 1998. Everybody else was like leaving, but we moved there.
Yeah.
And everybody was so appreciative of all the help that came into the city, all the other communities
yeah.
that surrounded it, took people in, fed them, helped, and whatnot. And so when this happened, there was this overwhelming sentiment that we've got to get up there and we've got to do for them what they did for us. But it was so cool. Here are these young athletes. Most of them, I think it was in August that it happened, because football practices were going on, and most of these kids were football players. And, you know, they're down in basements, pulling stuff out of basements, washers and dryers. I mean, all kinds of stuff, doing heavier work that, you know, that maybe elderly people can't do. And the appreciation and how good those kids felt about helping, how connected they felt to that city and their own community. It was just, it was really cool. Really cool stuff.
It was. And after having Grand Forks trashed, their town trashed, being able to return the favor is huge for those kids going up to Roseau.
Yeah. But again, it's just being raised right. And again, it's not that you can't do that in a big town, but it doesn't, for instance, I remember my kids, they weren't there during the flood of 1997. So I can't remember what year it was, but the rivers were rising and they got let out to, everybody in high school got let out to go sandbag. So they're down sandbagging on the river, right? And all the restaurants in town are sending food down there, right? You see yep. these trucks pull up from the Italian Moon, and offloading pizzas, and everybody else, every other, what's the place at the south end on Washington where you go for your birthday? Papa Joe's?
Yeah, Papa Joe's.
No, it's not Papa Joe's. It's something else.
No, it's Happy Joe's.
Happy Joe's. Happy Joe's. Right? And they just send, like, you know, as much pizza as they could get into a vehicle, they'd send it down there, and you know, kids would get fed, and they'd work, and they're sandbagging, and there's generators, and there's floodlights, and they're down there for as long as they can stay down there. And then they're coming back, and people see them in town, and they thank them because they're filthy. And just, you know, you feel part of, you feel connected to a movie, to a community. And then one of the coolest things was, after the flood, there's this really cool summer program in Grand Forks called Summer Performing Arts. So it's called SPA, its initials, SPA. And they put on a play about the flood. And
oh my God.
So they put it on in a place that holds roughly, 10,000-11,000 people in the Fritz, something like that?
Chester Fritz holds about 3,000 people.
Okay. They sold this thing out. How many nights in a row, Kim? Do you remember?
Oh, geez, I think it was 4 or 5 nights in a row.
No, it was longer than that. It was double digits. I know that. It was like 11. They extended the performance because you could not get a ticket for this thing.
They did. It ran for,
More than a
couple of weeks.
Yeah, it ran for a couple of weeks. And so then when they had the flood in New Orleans, people from New Orleans at FEMA's urging came to Grand Forks. And
yes.
Did you meet with them, Kim?
I had a huge cocktail party for them when they were here. when that delegation came up from New Orleans, I guess I fed a couple hundred people. I put a tent up outside like I used to do.
Right.
And then had this buffet, not Sloppy Joe's either.
No, but the thing was that you had to give through the arts, give young people, and this is all originally produced. There is a song called The Big Bad Flood that's hilarious. The Big Bad Flood, it came over the wall, and it's towards the end of the play because it is. It's centered around the radio. Right. And
yeah.
a mutual friend of ours, actually the guy who got me into broadcasting, who Kim used to be on the radio with, his name's Scott Hennen. And they stayed on the air the whole time during the flood. And so they would, the radio was your lifeline. And so the play focuses around things that get heard on the radio and then the reactions to it. In families and what's going to happen to us and all the rest of this. But it was the voice of the community and what the community went through. And so they would dust this play off at the 5-year anniversary, at the 10-year commemoration. And different kids would do it. In fact, the last time they did it, I want to say, was in 2017, and it was the 20th. Yeah, of the flood. And they said it was probably the last time, but the kids who were in it were not even alive when the flood happened, which was a first.
Yeah.
They had heard about it, and they said, it's really interesting. Our kids are going home and talking to their parents who were, this is a big part of everybody's life, changed everybody's life, a lot. And they're going home, and they're coming back with these stories about, I talked to my mom, and I talked to my grandma, and, I talked to our neighbors, and I told them I was in the play, and they were like, oh, and then we started talking about the flood. And so it was really interesting. But, yeah, small town America, man. It does not get cooler than small town America. All right? At least I don't think, anyway. So, anyway. All right. Somebody sent me an email and said, hey, Mac, I have a problem with my weight. And I would be curious if you could ask the chef, how do you cook without sugar? What are the things that you could do? One of the things I hate about my life is I love sweets. And how do you do sweets without sugar? The answer is it sucks. So does he have any remedies relative to cooking without sugar? Are there decent substitutes? Because my weight, I've found I can control it really well if I simply stay away from sugar. The more sugar in my diet, I think like a lot of people, especially as I've gotten older, the more issue I have with my weight. So with that said, would you mind asking him about sugar and cooking in general? Maestro?
Okay. There are a lot of sugar substitutes. I happen to prefer stevia. It's an organic, natural sugar that's made from bark or something like that.
What?
I can't. But it's, doesn't have any chemicals in it like the pink packets or the blue packets and all that stuff. This stevia comes in a green packet.
So
and,
what color is it? How do you spell it?
S, just a minute, hold on. S-E-A-V, I'll be right back here. Keep talking, baby.
Did you mean stevia, S-T-E-V-I-A?
S-T-E-V-I-A.
Organic stevia.
Yep, I got it. I got the box right here.
All right, tell me. It's okay. So,
no sodium, no fat. Carb is less than 1 gram. Sugar is less than gram. Total sugar is less than 1 gram. And it's It's a leaf extract.
So talk to me about taste. Does it taste okay?
It tastes like sugar to me. Wow. I love it.
Come on.
No, I do. I use it in my oatmeal instead of sugar. I used to use brown sugar.
Yes.
And butter.
Hello.
And I just use this stevia packet, and in my I have these oatmeals in packets.
Right.
In the microwave with water.
Right.
And then I'll put that in, and that's good. Maybe some blueberries.
You put butter? Hold on. You put butter in your oatmeal?
Yeah.
That's some serious stuff.
I never said it.
No.
What's wrong with you people?
Butter. You throw a little sour cream in there, too, to fire it up? Holy smokes. It's not a baked potato, bro. It's oatmeal.
Oh, is it? I said bacon bits. I don't.
That's an idea, though. I wonder how it tastes. Holy smokes.
Yeah, a little sour cream chai bacon in your oatmeal. My wife would kill me if she saw that.
Stevia is a sweetener and sugar substitute extracted from the leaves of the plant species Stevia ribaudinia, native to Brazil and Paraguay. The body does not metabolize the glucose in stevia, and therefore it contains zero calories like some artificial sweeteners.
Yeah.
How about that? There you have it.
There you go. That and to avoid sweets, I know this is going to sound silly, but make a fruit salad with, say, slice some banana, throw some blueberries, cut grapes in half. You can do strawberries, kiwis, and squeeze a little lemon juice over the fruit, especially the bananas, because otherwise they'll turn brown. You have to put citrus on there. And then take one or two packets of the stevia and pour it over, and it's just deluxe. And it's best if you let it sit. Say you want to have a nice dessert. Well, you make this fruit salad and let it sit for a couple of hours, and then the juices from the fruit and the lemon or lime, whatever you like, or even orange, fresh orange. It's just a fabulous dessert. Hmm. And then you could put some petroleum byproduct. What's that called? Miracle Whip or whatever it is.
Hey, don't
what's the thing that comes in a plastic carton?
The what?
I can't bring it up right now, but somebody will text it in. Instead of real whipped cream.
Oh, Miracle Whip?
Yeah, that's it.
Is that's not the, what's the stuff in the can?
Oh, that's a Ready Whip. That's aerosol. Now,
oh my God, I need somebody that would like squirt that in their mouth.
Oh, Liz, don't get turn this into a sex show.
They had it in the refrigerator. I kid you not. I'm like, what just happened? Right?
Yeah. What did I just see?
She liked to eat sweets, and so there was like a half a chocolate cake or something like on the counter, but it had been there for a couple of days, and And I heard this. I said, what happened to the cake? She said, I threw it away. So I don't know why. I saw it like face down in the garbage can.
And why?
Well, she said she threw it away. So I don't know why, but I flicked it, right? And guess what was underneath? It was upside, so it was upside down, so only the bottom of the cake holder was there. There was nothing. She ate it and said she threw it away.
Oh God. Oh man.
So I fished it out of the garbage can and I walked to the other room and I said, the cake disappeared. She's like, I ate it. I'm like, well, why did you say you threw it away? She said, because, stupid. You're not supposed to say you ate half a chocolate cake. Don't you know anything about women? I said, evidently not.
That's good.
It was funny. So here's another question. Another email. Mac, this is actually exciting because sugar, I think, is the road to hell relative to anybody's diet. And if the chef says he can't tell the difference, I'm relatively impressed with that. Now, he uses it in baking and all of that? Question mark?
Yes, my wife does use it in baking. You can buy stevia in a bulk. Not you don't have to stand around and open all these little packets. And they sell it in just like regular sugar. But you don't use as much of this.
It's more
when
potent.
You bake.
It's more potent. It's more potent.
Yeah. It is, and I like the stevia because it doesn't have that. For me, I'm just speaking for me. For it you. Doesn't have a bitter aftertaste like some of those other
color packages.
Yeah, like the red, the blue, or the.
But
yellow.
I've never heard anybody say that. I've never heard anybody say that they use that stuff in baking.
You can use it in baking.
Hmm.
My wife has used it in baking. She uses regular sugar, but I like to make fruit salads for my sweet hit. it's a lot easier and you know, those of us who love sugar.
Yes.
That's the best way I've found to handle my sugar craving, because once you start eating sugar, whether it's candy bars or soft drinks, whatever, all that does is make you crave and want it more. You know, like if you have a donut
or a Snickers,
you just can't eat one donut.
Or
I mean, you come to Krispy Kreme and say, "Oh, just give me one donut." Are you kidding me? You walk out with a six-pack, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, I'll just have one of those Chips Ahoy's.
Yeah. Like that Lay's commercial.
Can I have one?
You just eat one. Yeah. Or, you go into Whitman's Candy and say, just give me one chipper.
Yeah, have one. Come on. Don't even go there. It is so good, though. I mean, that's a fact. It's a straight-up fact.
I can deny my love for sugar. We talked about last summer. We were talking about strawberry pie.
Yes. And
my first experience with strawberry pie was Frisch's Big Boy. And one of the greatest desserts I've ever had in my life was when I chomped into that first piece of strawberry pie with that strawberry glaze. It's just all sugar. It's just it goes right to your heart.
Well, you know, my mom's cherry pie recipe. Testify, right? My mom's cherry pie recipe, that's the what makes that special is the sugar and the cinnamon in the filling.
Yeah, and I think there's like, I think pretty close to 2 cups of sugar in that pie.
Hello.
Sure. Beth would, she made one this winter around Christmas time because I was just craving it. With the dark cherries. Oh, yeah. My God. You know, what she'll do is she pisses and moans. She'll bake something, and I get one slice, for Christ's sakes, and then she gives it away to Chad, our neighbor.
What?
Yeah. I get one slice. Maybe I can squeeze two out of it. She says, you can have this in here. You'll eat the whole damn thing. I said, well, you think? I used to have just a real serious Jones for sugar.
I still do. I fight mine because, I mean, look, I will forego just about all foods save my junk food cravings, you know, and what are my junk food cravings? Well, let's see, Chips Ahoy, you know, cookies, potato chips or some kind of corn chips that you could put salsa on. Regular Lay's potato chips with all that salt on it.
Yes.
Come on, man. I mean, that stuff is.
You know what we do is we go and look for low sodium chips or. Corn chips or potato chips. And Beth came back the other day with a bag. She loves corn chips. Well, I can't be eating this with like 100 milligrams or 120 milligrams of sodium, which they most do. And she says, look at the sodium. It's only 50 milligrams. And I say, oh, that makes it okay.
Yes.
But it does. It does. I mean, that's how because you can buy potato chips and we look at the sodium content on everything. I certainly do because I have to.
Right. Well, that's it, you know, and people, you grow up and you eat certain foods and then as you get older, you know, you want to eat them, but, you know, a lot of times people, because of either the sugar content or the salt content, they simply can't do it. And so it's, and people have a tough time. Look, I mean, how do I live without eating like the food I've always eaten? And that's a good question. And then I think though it clears itself up when you get scared sufficiently and you say, okay, well, I do want to live and maybe me living is better than the alternative. So let me do that. Now here's another question. So, using this kind of sugar, I would have to bake my favorite dishes and experiment with it. Is that what I'm getting from the chef, Kim?
Yes. And if you use this stevia sugar, do a small batch of baking to make sure you get the balance between you get the right sweetness and the right flavor you want. Don't be going and baking a bunch of pies and stuff, cakes. Maybe do some cupcakes or something small that you can control and experiment. You know.
Well, you know, you could actually start out with cupcakes and you could graduate. Yeah. If you bake single cupcakes, you could bake a series of them and add sugar as you went or artificial sugar as you went, and then that would be a very efficient way to do it, yes?
Yes. You know, you don't bake, you do like a half a dozen or.
Why don't you do one?
Small, you know, you take your, cut your full batch in half and then use the same sugar amounts. On that big box of stevia, the loose Lee Pack stuff, it'll tell you the proportions to use.
It will?
I'm pretty sure it does. And so you get the same flavor. I can't remember whether you use, I'm pretty sure you use less of the stevia. So, you know, and it's vegan free, gluten free, all those free stuff.
Yeah, everything's free. It's totally free.
Totally free, baby. Free Willy.
There you go. Free Willy. All right, here's another email. I'm really contemplating on putting bacon, chives, and sour cream in my oatmeal. That would be very, very interesting. I've never really heard anything like that. It's good to listen to quality cooking shows so you get ideas like this. Yeah, make sure you tell everybody where you heard that, too.
Yeah, and also put the little sidebar that I was joking. However, instead of oatmeal, try cream of rice. Now, there you might have something like grits. You know what I'm saying, folks? There you go.
Grits. I've never been a grit guy. And I've warmed up. I didn't used to be an oatmeal person, and I'll eat oatmeal now. But grits, what are grits made out of?
Corn? Cornmeal.
Cornmeal.
It's cornmeal. It's the southern version of polenta, which is Italian grits.
Polenta.
It's cornmeal. And with grits, what they do, you add water and the grits, and you thicken them, and then you can add cheese to them. Make them cheesy grits. I've had Parmesan Reggiano in polenta.
For breakfast?
No, not for breakfast, but you could.
So when do the Italians serve polenta? Do they serve it with any meal?
Yes, lunch and dinner. They'll serve polenta on with stews, and they'll put polenta on top of it, or like a lamb, beef shank or a lamb shank. What I used to do at my Italian joint in Grand Forks, I would cook up a huge batch of polenta, and I'd spread it on a baking sheet that's like, 18 inches by 36 inches.
Yes.
And then I'd put it in the fridge, and then I'd cut triangles or squares, and then I would take a chunk of polenta square, and then I'd throw it on the charbroiler.
Oh.
And I'd grill it, and then I'd put some Gorgonzola cheese, melt Gorgonzola cheese, which is Italian blue cheese, folks, and a little bit of roasted red peppers, and a little bit of demi-glaze. That's like a sauce, a brown sauce. On top of that, serve that as an appetizer or a side. And then you get the crunch on the outside of the polenta, and then it's creamy inside. Very, very good, I might add.
Interesting. Leave it to the Italians to sexy up grits and make it a real meal, as opposed to a punishment.
And you can do the same thing for any Southerners listening. You can do the same thing with grits. Is you mix your cheese in After the grits is cooked, it takes about 15 minutes or so. They have instant grits also. But when they're just about done, you can add a little cream or butter and then some grated cheese, whatever your favorite cheese is. And then spread it on a pan and cool it. And then cut chunks and you can fry them up or grill them. And use them as, that's your starch, is your side.
Got it. Here's another one. I'm going to be doing some weekend grilling over charcoal. And the meat that I'll be grilling has fairly high fat content. So I am anticipating flames. Could you give me some grilling advice on how I keep high content fat from turning into char broil? I know the answer to
yes.
this. I know the answer to this. Go ahead, Kim.
Okay, what you do is, we've discussed this before, you start it out over the coals. You have to have an indirect side where no coals are underneath. And so you grill on the direct heat, and to get your sear on your meat, and you grill it on both sides, get your crisscross marks, your char broiler marks, but it'll flame up, but you have to do that first, and then flip it on the indirect heat beside that flame, and the indirect heat will finish cooking the inside, and you want 120 for rare in the middle of whatever you're cooking, 140 for medium rare. And there you go. There you have it.
Yeah, indirect heat, man. That's no need to grill over that stuff. You will probably have to pile it. You have to have more heat because you're going to use it. And depending on how much you're going to cook, you know, you got to kind of pay attention to that. But, yeah, the charbroil is a thing of the past if you pay attention. So sear and move.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And if you move it to a lower, just move it to the side.
Yeah, move it to the side, and it's going. That fat's going to go, you know. In fact, we did a show, and I think I got a bunch of pictures that I put up on the website of all these different grill configurations. There was like hardware that you could buy, right? And so I want to say it was like stainless steel stuff or
yes, yes. Remember, yes, it was.
Right? And it was so depending on the configuration, the base of your grill, they had little containers. And some were like rectangular, like relatively narrow rectangular stuff. So all the charcoal was on, if you had a kind of like square grill, it was on the outside, and so the charcoal's on the outside, the meat stays in the inside, and you get this even heat that kind of moves around the meat, kind of like a convection oven. How about that, Kim?
Yes, that's exactly what it does. You circulate your heat, but you do want to start it over the charcoal to sear your meat.
Yeah, but there's all these configurations that I never. I was looking at it going, whoa, this stuff is cool. And then some were like just a half moon, you know. So it was a filled in crescent, and you put your and it held your charcoal, so you didn't get any spillover. So you had a very very sharp dividing line between where the charcoal was and where it was. And so I mean, it was all. Go to your local grill store if you don't really want to screw it up, and you'll probably find those containers, because the world is awash and stuff like that with all the cooking shows on and all the rest of it. You can find whatever you need. So burning stuff when you grill, come on, that's so passe. Don't do it. Just say no.
Yeah, that's right.
Just say no. Don't go there, girlfriend.
Don't go. Just say no.
Just say no, baby. Just say no.
Well, the technology today pretty much helps you not burn things. And if you listen to us, we'll help you too.
Yeah, we'll set you straight. We'll set you free and straight.
What we're trying to do. You want everybody to be a grill master out there.
Yeah, and look, you don't have to be a genius to do it. All you got to do is go buy a $30 digital meat thermometer, and you can cook just about anything. Here's another email. Hey, Mac, I actually tried, after listening to you and the chef, I think it was last week, the broiler, which I've never really done. I've always been kind of a skillet guy. And I have to tell you, I'm probably not going back to the skillet. The ability, he stuck the steak in the broiler.
Yeah.
The ability to watch a digital thermometer coupled with watch how the exterior of the steak cooked is an absolute winner. Winner, winner, steak dinner. Thank you very much. Well, there you have it. So you can learn all these kind of cool things we talk about here on a Friday. Because Kim, he was not a, that's how they cooked all their steaks, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. So that came up last week, right?
Yeah. But at home, we were talking about, you know, cooking. I can't even get near my grill. There's so much snow on the deck. And so I use the broiler. And it all depends, crank that broiler up. That broiler is going to be 600 degrees, if not hotter. And so you put that steak under there and, about 6-8 inches from the broiler. And you have it sitting on a pan and it works beautifully.
Yeah. Let me tell you, you can be a virtual genius with a grill and in the kitchen if you get a digital meat thermometer and you just figure out a few things.
And that using the broiler in your oven allows you never to miss a day of grilling. You know what I'm saying? If you want to char something, baby, you can always char it in the oven.
But you don't need to. And that's what that's cool for you. I had never even thought about that. And that's kind of where the question came, I think, out of an email. But it was, compare and contrast skillet, skillet versus the broiler. And, one of the things that whoever wrote the email, I think, said was that I like the broiler because I can watch it. So I can make sure that the exterior looks great, and then at the same time, I'm watching the meat thermometer. I flip it, I make sure both sides are great, and then I can either kill the broiler or I can drop it down to the lowest rung in my oven and gaboosh, front row, baby. If I recall,
I love it. The gaboosh.
Yeah, gaboosh. So got that going for you. Another email. Mac, I have a question for the chef since we're doing all email questions today, which I tend to like. When he's making desserts and he is going to do whipped cream, I don't think the chef just throws normal whipped cream on a dessert. What are some of the things that he does to whipped cream to kind of sexy it up? Interesting question.
Okay. You can, first of all, you have to get heavy whipping cream. You can add a little hint of vanilla. You can put sugar in there. You can even take, like a liqueur, like Grand Marnier or Cointreau, and put like a teaspoon in there to give it that orange flavor. And then you whip it to peaks. You don't want to over whip it, your whipped cream, because it'll fall. It'll just turn into yuck. It won't last very long. So you whip it so there's stiff peaks. And if you use a blender, I mean, like KitchenAid, and you mix it, not many people whip it by hand. Now, what we used to do at the restaurant is you buy these canisters at your local food store, and you pour a pint of whipping cream in there, and they have these, and then you screw the top on, and they have a CO2 cartridge, and you shoot that in, and it's just like those aerosol cans, like Cool Whip, but it's real whipped cream, and then you shake it up, and then you get fresh whipped cream, and you can put it in the fridge, and it'll last a few days. I had two of them that I always had a backup because we went through it fast. And then you take the cap off, you rinse out the canister, make sure it's dry, then you can put more whipped cream in there. You can add vanilla, you can add sugar if you want it sweet, or stevia, or that's what I would use. Put a few packets of stevia in there.
Of course.
I have put the Coors in there to give it a little flavor. You can, if it's St. Patrick's Day, which is coming up soon, if you have one of these canisters, you can put a little green food coloring to make your whipped cream green.
Nice. Well done. Well played.
It's very cool. Like if you're making, some kind of Irish dessert.
Yes.
And you want green whipped cream to surprise the folks.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Name an Irish dessert. Like, what are we talking about?
I have no idea. a pudding. What's the name of that pudding? There is an Irish pudding, but I...
Yeah, nobody can remember it. Things you don't hear people say, right, ever.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go eat Irish tonight.
Yeah. not really.
Not really. Things you don't really hear.
But that's what I'm saying with that dispenser. And it'll be a great tool and very easy to do your whipped cream in there. And you buy these cartridges at the same place you buy the canister, and they usually come in 6 or 12 packs, and one cartridge will last one filling of whipped cream, and I think it was maybe a pint and a half of whipped cream. I can't remember exactly. But they're very good dispenser for making whipped cream. And it's you make it, you create it, you can put whatever you want in there to flavor it. So there you go.
All right. Give us an update. How the hockey team do last weekend?
They split last weekend.
We didn't need a split.
No, we needed a sweep. No. We're number 19 in the country. We play Omaha in Grand Forks 2 games this weekend. We're 4 points behind Western Michigan. They have the tiebreaker, so we have to get 5 points. They have to lose one night, and we have to sweep.
All right.
Otherwise, we're on the road next weekend.
Did the playoffs start next weekend?
The playoffs to get into the Frozen Faceoff, the league tournament.
The league tournament, not the national tournament.
Not the national. That doesn't come until the end of March.
Got it. All right, sir. Well, first of all, thank you for all the great advice. And for those of you that are just tuning in, the first thing we talked about was a sugar substitute that Kim uses that you might want to check out. It is called, what's it called, Kim?
Stevia. Stevia.
There you have it. And Kim says he uses it in place of sugar. And Kim?
Yes, I highly recommend it. I put it in my coffee if I want sugar. When I'm doing an Irish coffee, I'll take 2 packets instead of 2 sugar cubes. And then I put a little Jameson's Irish whiskey. And then I float some heavy whipped cream on top of that. And I'm in the front row with, and I forgot the coffee. Yeah, this coffee.
There's a conversion chart. They have printable conversion charts online.
Yes.
And so a quart of a cup, and you can go to the Stevia conversion calculator, and that's online, and it will tell you how much Stevia to use for a recipe. So there you have it. How about that?
Way to go, Dr. Good.
All right. All right, sir. Thanks for the visit.
All the best, and in baseball starting.
That's right. Thank God. Thank God. Go Yankees.
Yeah, they look good. I saw them on TV hitting home runs like crazy in spring training.
Well, got to do it in the real. I like baseball. I'm glad it's starting again, and give my life purpose once again.
Yeah.
Go Dodgers, baby! All right, thanks, Kim.
Take care. Thank you. Best to your family.
There you bet. You bet. That is Kim Holmes, the Almarine Radio head chef here. I didn't even introduce him today. Sorry about that. But that's who that is, in case you don't know. More of Almarine Radio coming up next. Gunner's set to join us on a Friday. Peyton Davis' birthday. Don't touch that dial.
To be fully fit, you have to be physically fit. You also have to be mentally fit.
I wish that more warriors would realize how important it is that you get the psychological support that you need so that you can focus on the rest of your life.
I think it takes strength in order to admit that you have an issue. But it also takes intuitiveness of a friend, a leader, a supervisor to pick up on the signal that the soldier is having issues and needs to seek professional help in dealing with it.
It's also important for the lowest possible levels of leadership to be very supportive in helping their members get the help that they need.
When I went to get help, I had more help than I could ask for from my entire command.
It's sometimes challenging to come to a senior staff member or senior officer in the unit with a problem. There's not a commanding officer out there or a leadership staff out there that doesn't want to help. So don't hesitate. Come ask.
Learn more by visiting www.realwarriors.net or calling 1-866-966-1020.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans have taken off their uniforms and put them away, carefully packed and safely stowed. But for some veterans, the uniform isn't so easily removed. The emotions experienced while serving continue to weigh on them. Life after service is different. Many veterans find transitioning difficult, and daily life is no longer as enjoyable as it once was. Some feel overwhelmed and lost. But that uncertainty doesn't take away from their strength and courage, nor does it take away from the sense of duty veterans carry with them. The transition from service is different for everyone. If you are a veteran going through a difficult time, or know one who is, the power of one person, one connection, one act of compassion can make a difference. For free 24/7 confidential support, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1, or visit veteranscrisisline.net.